Call the meeting of the Higher Education Policy and Finance Committee to order. We have a quorum, and first order of business would be approval of the minutes. We have a motion.
So moved.
Okay, Representative Poppy moves the motions from March the 3rd. Any questions or corrections, comments? Last call. All those in favor of the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes approved. Today we have one bill that we'll be hearing, and also before that, presentation from the Higher Education Facilities Authority. Okay. You have your book with you. It's the first section as you open it up. You want to follow along? Welcome to our Higher Education Committee. Would you identify yourself for the record, please?
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I am Mary Ann Remedios, the Executive Director of the Higher Education Facilities Authority. At your request, I'm here to explain briefly what the authority does and how we are funded. The authority was created in 1971 in order to help private, nonprofit colleges and universities get tax-exempt bond financing. The authority issues bonds and then lends the entire proceeds to higher education institutions to be used to acquire, construct, or renovate buildings, acquire equipment, or to refinance projects. It is up to the borrower to repay the debt. The bonds are secured only by the credit of the borrower and any reserves or special guarantees provided by that borrower. The bonds are not a debt of the state and have no effect on the state's credit or debt limits. The authority is able to provide more favorable interest rates because of its status as a government entity. The interest paid by the borrower to the bondholders is exempt from both Minnesota and federal income tax. The operating expenses of the authority are paid from fees from each borrower in connection with their bond issues. The fees are supplemented by investment earnings on our operating reserve. The authority has never received a state appropriation for any purpose. Our statutory purpose is to provide a service to college at low cost and at no cost to the state. We therefore charge fees that are, together with investment earnings, just enough to break even. We are limited by federal tax laws as to what we can charge our colleges. Our enabling statute states that we can only have a certain amount of bonds outstanding at any given time. The statutory limit has been increased every few years at our request. The current limit is $1.3 billion. As of today, we have just over $1 billion of bonds outstanding. We've issued over $1.9 billion since 1971. We've issued 186 series of bonds, with the series size gradually growing larger. The average issue size in recent years has been about $23 million. The authority has issued an average of about $114 million per year in each of the past five fiscal years. The colleges make their decisions independently and based on market conditions. Bonding activity, therefore, fluctuates from year to year. So far in this fiscal year, we've issued $168 million. The budget book profile confirms that the authority does not receive state appropriations. We're shown as depositing other funds to be processed by MMB and paid to our staff of two FTEs. The funds come from fees we charge to borrowers and investment earnings on those fees. We believe that by having MMB handle the payroll, it provides additional oversight over our operations. Our financial statements are audited by an independent CPA firm, and copies of the annual reports are sent to each of our private colleges, the Office of Higher Education, the Attorney General's Office, and others. I'd be pleased to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you very much. Short and concise. Just for my own information, I didn't catch your last name.
Remedios, R-E-M-E-D-I-O-S.
Okay, thank you very much. Members, have any questions? I don't see any, but we did come up with one.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Benson.
Thank you very much. Just so that we can go on record of having a question, because it is important what you do. Any nonprofit, private, secondary, post-secondary institution can use this?
Make
application, I should say?
That is correct.
Okay.
Private, nonprofit,
post-secondary
institutions, yes. And I think some of you may be interested in Bethel in particular, or Gustavus, and St. Mary's, and St. John, St. Ben's. All of them have issued through the authority, and I know that the representatives here who are from those districts.
Okay, thank you. I think that concludes.
Thank you.
Your testimony.
Thank you very,
thank
much.
You very much for coming. All right, next we have House File 856. Which we'll hear and be holding over. Welcome.
Mr. Chair, I want to thank you for, in committee, thank you for allowing me to come up speak on this bill. I bring before you House File 856, and this bill would address the short-term impact of tuition increases on students and families in Minnesota, but would also provide for long-term tuition guidance for the Minnesota students and their families, along with MinSCU and the University of Minnesota. This bill essentially freezes tuition for Minnesota resident undergraduates attending any of the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities or the University of Minnesota for all academic terms in fiscal years 12 and 13. After that time, it limits the annual increase of tuition accordingly to the CPI index, or the Consumer Price Index, moving forward beyond that. Yes.
We need to do a little technical work here.
Sorry about that. This is my first time. So.
That's okay. Anyway, I will move House File 856 this time, and it will be held over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. I think that takes care of that technical
All right.
part.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry about my eagerness to share. So, with passage of this bill, our Minnesota State College and Universities and the University of Minnesota system will need to make true structural reforms to push revenue to the classrooms and reduce administrative costs. During the past budget shortfalls, we have seen significant increases in tuition, many of which have made up a vast majority of any reductions of the state appropriation. The ongoing tuition guidance called for in this bill would allow students attending Minnesota public colleges and universities to better plan and budget for their cost of their education. And in these times, it's important that we send a message that we're all serious about reforming all aspects of government, including higher education. It is no exception. So. I believe Minnesotans currently pay about the third highest tuition in the nation and the highest average tuition in the Midwest to attend our community and technical colleges, and the 10th highest average tuition in the nation to attend our public four-year institutions. Tuition at MinSCU institutions has increased every year from the fiscal year 02, regardless of the change of the state appropriation. And as part of this discussion, about how we are changing and what we are offering for state services, specifically higher education offering, Mr. Chair, I would ask you and your committee to consider this bill. So, go ahead.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Rukavina.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Swiatkowski. First of all, I guess my first question to you is, have you talked to research or anyone else about the mandate here to the University of Minnesota as far as telling them what they can do because of that constitutional autonomy question?
No, I have not.
So, Mr. Chair.
Representative Rukavina.
I guess Ms. Novak, is this bill constitutional in your opinion? Even though I know you're not an attorney, but... could you give us some advice on that first issue?
Mr. Chair and members, the Constitution does grant the University of Minnesota autonomy, and that gives the Board of Regents the authority to govern the university and to make those kinds of decisions.
So, Mr.
Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair, if you were to include this in the in your omnibus bill, you would it be of your opinion that you were not upholding the Constitution of the state of Minnesota? Because I know, you know, I'm a constitutionalist like you. And I am. My people laugh, but I'm probably one of the most strictest constitutionalists around here. So that's my question to you.
Well, I think it's something we have to, you know, certainly consider. It would perhaps be better if it just limited to public higher education institutions and didn't specifically mention the university.
Okay, well, thank you. Thank you for that clarification. I guess my next question to Representative Swedzinski would be, you know, we always get outsmarted, even though we try to pass laws around here by, you know, certain bureaucracies. So, Representative Swedzinski, where does it say in here that they can't increase fees just to make up the loss of tuition?
There is no, Mr. Chair. Representative Rukavina, there is no provision for fee increase that I see within this bill.
And so, Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina, how would you address the fact that they could put a fee on, you know, of 5 or 10 or 15% on top of other fees to make up for the lost revenue?
Well, I think those, you know, I think the primary goal of this is to really drive this conversation of addressing those issues of between the Student Association and the Board of Regents and the Board of Trustees and how they're making those decisions and looking at, you know, it's on average, I think, Southwest State University, I think we're looking at average tuition about $8,000 per semester, or per year, I should say, and, you know, those that doesn't, I think it includes, that equation includes about $600 worth of some fees and some things like that, so... I would offer, if there's an amendment that you'd like to offer to the bill, I would address some of that.
Well,
Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair and members, you know, I think I've been very cognizant of the tuition increases around here for the last decade, and I tried to address them. Unfortunately, you know, we don't have a federal stimulus package for your target this year, in which we mandated to both the Minsky and University System, Representative Swedzinski, last session, that it be used, or two years ago, I guess, that it some of that money be used to buy down tuition. We don't have that luxury anymore. But, you know, I also got kind of strong-armed and threatened with a veto by former Governor Plenty if we didn't put some tuition caps. And we tried to work with both Minsky and the University System on what that number would be. So have you, Representative Swedzinski, tried to at all work with the university or Minsky on coming up with some type of reasonable compromise?
Well, I've been visiting with some of the representatives from my local college, and their discussions have looked at potentially working with some of the students' associations and what their belief or where, as far as limiting the potential increase.
And finally,
Rukavina.
Mr. Chair, Representative, you said in your remarks that you want to put revenue into the classroom and reduce administrative costs. And where does it say that in this bill? I don't see it anywhere.
Well, I think that's the general goal, is to look at when this conversation happens, when we're discussing these things between the students and the trustees. I think a lot of campuses were concerned about some of the issues relating to potentially some of the bonuses and that happened on Cedar Street. And at the same time, what we're doing at the state legislature as far as increases in tuition and some of those, and that's really what, when I made that comment, that's what I was driving at, is talking about, you know, if we're going to be looking at those issues, do all the individuals attending classes need to carry that entire burden, or are there places within the administration, within Cedar Street up here in St. Paul, that we can look at to find some things that maybe we can have some cost savings there? So,
well,
Representative Rukavina.
Representative Swedzinski, I don't fault you for trying to address the whole issue of tuition and costs, but, you know, the way this is written, what you're going to do is closed cash classrooms, so you won't have to put any revenue in there. Because I would suspect, and I don't know when Minsky and you come up here, but I'm sure 65 up to 70% of their, you know, costs are salaries and mm-hmm. benefits for their employees. And, you know, what you're going to do is shut down classrooms and offerings and probably maybe do more harm than good. There's no guarantee, and I've worked with Ms. Novak in the past to try to write bills for the last 3 years when we've known about the cliff that we're facing that would limit some type of non-instructional administrative, but it's so hard to write it in statute that you don't know what's going to, mm-hmm. what the consequences are going to be. So, you know, as well intentioned as this bill is, I hope it doesn't go any farther than this hearing, because I think it does a little more harm than good. Although your goal is exemplary, I don't think that this will help. I think it'll just hurt our public education systems, in my humble opinion.
Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm still trying to get my head around Brother Rukavina and I being fellow constitutionalists, but I agree with him. I don't see how we even pass a bill, move a bill along, or include a bill in an omnibus bill that's got an unconstitutional provision, and yet if you take it out, then you've left out one half, if you will, generally speaking. So I, too, agree with the concept, Representative Rukavina, of trying to keep a hold on tuition increases. So, Representative Swedzinski, I have a couple questions for you. Mr. Chair, one question I have for Representative Swedzinski is, why did you choose CPI?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Morrow, I think just because there's a vast lack of other weights in order to measure that against, you know, when we're looking at inflation, we're looking at the calculation of the CPI index. I do believe, you know, some of the areas where it does diminish its relevancy to reality is energy, food, and those things. So when it comes to education, how do we, when CPI is indexed, I believe the way it's calculated is if food and energy prices are going up, its impression on the CPI index is diminished. But if the price of energy and food are going down, then it helps out, we felt that it was probably the only decent measure that at least came close to something that was generally accepted.
Representative Morrow.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm sure we'll hear from our two economists to my right here at some point on whether CPI or perhaps the Higher Education Price Index is a better measure. But then again, it depends on what your goal is or what your message is. You know, today's Minnesota Daily says gas prices hit home with you student commuters. So if I'm trying to address the costs that students are seeing, maybe I use the CPI. Maybe I'm trying to measure tuition against all the other costs, energy, food, and the like. If I'm trying to measure what's happening in the colleges and universities, maybe the better measure is the Higher Education Price Index. But that, both of those questions, I would argue, sidestep the real issue. And that's what I'm afraid that we do here in part, because I'm not sure how. I think it'd be great. I think it'd be great in theory to be able to do this. But then Representative Rukavina laid out a host of practical questions. Does a bill like this, in essence, say to students, we're going to cap your tuition, but we're going to close down the course offerings in order to meet that cap? Or we're going to lay off the faculty, including your advisor? Are we going to close down programs? And so while an idea like this I agree with in spirit, I would want to, and I know we're going to hear from folks in a moment about this, but let me ask you, if I might, Mr. Chair, a second question. What will be the budget target for this committee?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morrow, I'm not privy to that information at this time. So,
Mr. Chair, if I might ask you, what might be the budget target for this committee?
Hang on.
Sorry about that. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. But, Mr. Chair, I think...
No, when the wife calls, you answer it, even if it's in the middle of a committee meeting.
And, Mr. Chair, I didn't mean to... I honestly did not see that you were on the phone when I asked that question.
Now I hung up on her, so I'm really... So what was the question, Representative Morrow?
Well, Mr. Chair, I think this is an important issue, and I do apologize about the phone call, but I did ask you what your budget target is.
Oh. Yeah, we're working on it.
Well, Mr. Chair, if I might continue, I think it's a little difficult to talk about a bill like this in the vacuum of what the budget target is, because I'll tell you, I think what the budget target is for this committee has a whole lot more impact at the end of the day of what's going to happen to tuition of the students in this room and the students across our state. So I would like to be hearing what the budget target is. What I'm taking from this bill, Representative Wodzinski, is that you believe the budget target for this committee should be relatively sound, fair. I don't know if we'd use the term full funding or what full funding might sound like, but the more that this committee's budget target is cut, the higher the tuition's going to go up. So I hope you're going to join me, Representative Rukavina, and the other members around this table in encouraging leadership to have a high or at least a fully or fair-funded budget target for this committee if you truly want to help tuition.
Yeah, Representative Morrow and others, that's the reason we're holding it over, to we have all of the information and... We'll go from there.
Mr. Chair?
Representative
Rukavina.
Can we
get back to the phone call what you got told to do?
I have a sick cat. Oh. So if you really, really want to know. And I don't know what...
See, and then you're going to cut the veterinary school.
Well, wish me well with the cat. That's all I can say. Representative Bannion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Wodzinski, I think Representative Morrow raises a good point in terms of what the proper CPI is, and I'm going to skip that discussion because you let an economist talk about CPI long enough, and you'll put the entire room to sleep. So let me get at it a different way. Have you looked at the rate of inflation of tuition here? I suspect some of our testifiers are going to talk to that, but have you looked at that relative to the rate of tuition increase at other state universities in the upper Midwest?
Representative Wodzinski?
I have not, and I think we could probably, Mr. Chair, Representative Bannion, if we could probably pull a couple of the testifiers up here, I think they might be better to answer that in relation to ourselves. So.
Mr. Chairman, I'm happy to just wait and let them do it in turn. They don't have to answer that question right away. Certainly. You've got an order you want them to present, then I'd say let's hear them.
Okay. All right. I think we'll move on to testimony, unless you have something further. Okay. I was just going to point out, for whatever it's worth here, in Section 2 there, where it says the University of Minnesota may, there's a may in there, so maybe that's the loophole we're looking for, to give them an opportunity,
Mr. Chair,
for flexibility.
Look on the back page.
Oh, turn it over.
May not.
Okay. I didn't see that part of it. So, all right, we'll move on. Travis Johnson is the first on my schedule here. So, point out some of these fine gentlemen were just recently in the Fergus Falls Community College last weekend, right?
Yeah, thank you, Chair Nordis. We actually really appreciated you coming to dinner, despite the garlic breath
yes,
that you ended up with afterwards.
Worn off by now. Appreciate you being here. Identify yourself for the record.
Absolutely. Chair Nordis, members, my name is Travis Johnson, the president of the Minnesota State College Student Association, and on my left here is Jeff Dipperner. He's our vice president. And I also wanted to point out that we had several students join us this afternoon in the crowd. They were here 2 weeks ago for our rally day, but they felt this was really important, so they made it down for this hearing as well. I speak before you today to share our concerns about the pattern of rapidly increasing tuition on our campuses and to ask for your help in controlling tuition increases at our two-year community and technical colleges by capping tuition increases at our institutions over the next biennium. We want to thank Representative Wodzinski and his co-authors, including Representative Fogel, for their awareness with the problems with tuition and their efforts to control tuition increases. 2 weeks ago, as I mentioned, hundreds of students traveled to the Capitol from around the state to express the need to stop tuition increases. Many of you attended our rally or met with student constituents that day to discuss how tuition impacts their individual success and the state's economic vitality. Paying for tuition is often the biggest threat to our students' academic success, and it is of the utmost importance that we limit tuition increases to ensure a college education remains accessible and affordable for anyone who is willing to work for it. Minnesota's community and technical college students are an invaluable resource to this state. They're the workers who will boost our short-term economic recovery and the next generation skilled workforce that will protect Minnesota's legacy of being one of the best places in America to not only live, work, but also to run a business. Our colleges provide high-quality training, producing skilled workers ready for the workforce in 2 years or less. The technical curriculum is designed to respond quickly to employer needs, and general education provides an accessible pathway to a four-year degree for Minnesotans and communities across the state. The vast majority of our graduates stay in Minnesota, and they contribute to our local economies. In today's economy, a college education is essential to individuals seeking a better, more stable life, not only for themselves, but for their families. Our two-year colleges serve Minnesotans from all walks of life, from dislocated workers returning for new marketable skills, to students returning to finish a degree that they never completed, and for high school graduates embarking on a higher education for the very first time. Unfortunately, as the need for a college education grows, it's becoming harder and harder to obtain. Our community and technical colleges are facing a tuition crisis, and I can't say that enough. At your seats, you should have a copy of our association's budget priorities, and on the cover, you'll see our headline. Our college's average tuition and fee rates are the highest in the Midwest and third highest nationally. Tuition and fees have almost doubled in the last 10 years, and you can find that information on the chart on the bottom of page 3. Students understand that when there's less money for the state to invest in higher education, our colleges and universities have an alternative source of revenue in tuition. But students also understand that there's need to increase tuition to continue having high quality education in the state. However, we don't think that's fair. This revenue source of tuition has been tapped every year in times of both surplus and deficit. If you turn to the chart on page 3 of the handout, you'll see that tuition at two-year public colleges has risen steadily, regardless of whether or not the system received increased state funding year after year. There's also a pattern to the state appropriation that those concerned about the future of higher education cannot afford to ignore. The cost of educating students in the Minsky system continues to rise, but state appropriations to the system have remained largely flat over the last decade, as illustrated on page 2 in the handout. Tuition and fee revenue have made up the difference, and students now provide for well over half of Minsky's revenue. It seems unlikely that the system will see any significant increases in state appropriations over time, and simply relying on tuition increases is not a sustainable model in the long term, nor is it beneficial to the future of our state. Our students, the ones in this room, the 400 or 500 a couple weeks ago, have asked us to ask you for help. And so next I'd like to turn over to Jeff, who will outline our students' position on tuition control.
Thank you, Chair Norns. Members, again, for the record, my name is Jeff Dippner, Vice President of MSCSA. Minsky's tuition rates are generally set by the system's Board of Trustees, as you all know, and we believe them to be sincere in their desire to control tuition costs. We try to work with the Board to address tuition concerns as much as we can. However, with budget uncertainties looming, the Board has been unwilling to proactively set a cap on tuition. Campuses have been giving estimates of a reasonable tuition increase by the Office of the Chancellor discussed as a 5% in each biennium. Our students simply do not agree with this scenario. A tuition increase of 10% over the biennium, including the loss of the stimulus funds, is just simply unreasonable. If history is any indicator of how budget cuts will be handled without a tuition cap, it's clear that students would be asked to shoulder a significant portion of those cuts in the form of tuition increases. In 2003, when the state faced a roughly $4.3 billion deficit, the Minsky system-based budget was reduced by $191 million. In order to make up that difference, colleges across the system implemented double-digit tuition increases, which are still felt on our campuses and by our students today. Of that $191 million, $173.6 million was made up in tuition increases, and that's just over 90%, and that's just completely unacceptable. Students want to be a part of the budget solution, but we are unwilling to be the budget solution. For context, a 5% tuition increase over the biennium today would bring in $120.5 million in new revenue to the Minsky system. Governor Dayton's proposal includes a 6% budget reduction for Minsky, reducing the system's actual 2011 base by only about $13 million, or $26 million over the biennium. We applaud Representative Swiedinski for his bold proposal to freeze tuition. While we cannot fully support a bill that would freeze tuition, we would like to work with the committee in the future to further develop a legislatively mandated tuition cap for the two-year system of Minsky. Thank you, and we'll stand for any questions.
Members, any questions? Representative Rukubina.
Jeff or Travis, do you have any idea as to what your membership is at as far as what a number might look like? Let's say, given the governor's budget proposal versus what might be another $150 million hit to the system if Representative Nornes doesn't get a good target.
Thank you, Chair Nornes, Representative Rukavina. We haven't settled on a specific number. As we stated, we don't believe that 5% is reasonable. We do have a chart that we'd be more than happy to share with the committee, though, that outlines what a percentage increase would be from 1 to 5 and how that would affect the system. It's not in the materials, but we'd be happy to give that to you.
Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair, I notice there are some students down from Lake Superior College, and I'm just, even though it's not in my district, I happen to know some of them, and I'm just wondering if maybe just a member, that unsolicited member, might not be want to comment on that.
I was going to ask if the group would have a spokesman who could. I wasn't sure where the students were from, so.
Okay. You don't know me, man. I know you think. Come on.
So my question, this is all one big group that's here, or are you part of a second
I'm
group?
I'm here with Sarah.
Oh, okay.
I'm here with Shannon, and I'm here with Heidi Bailey.
Okay. We have a number of students further up that we'll also have to find out. We'll identify.
St. Louis Park.
St. Louis Park. Okay, welcome here.
Just give your name.
Let's give them a hand. Okay, now you can identify yourself.
My name is Ron Wigren.
And you're representing yourself?
I'm representing Lake Superior College.
Okay.
Of Duluth, Minnesota, yes.
Okay.
We're down here to actually ask that you, this committee, recognize that the funding and the money that you put, every tax dollar you put into higher education, especially in the two-year system, you're going to get that return back. It's actually in our economic interest to spend money on higher education. Non-traditional students or non-traditional campuses, especially like two-year schools, you're actually getting a better return, and it's more cost-effective, especially the MinSCU system. I don't have the number that I need that someone was talking about for what it costs, the difference between a traditional student and non-traditional students, but it's considerably less. Just give me that.
Well,
okay,
that's maybe close enough.
Go ahead.
If does
Mr.
somebody
Chair,
have the
I
number?
Could, if I could just ask a non-traditional student from rural Minnesota, what type of, let's say this MinSCU and the university get cut about $150 million each, which might not be a, unreasonable guess. It could be more, it could be less. What kind of percentage having to go back to school, I assume, because you lost your job, what are you willing to pay to get that degree and get out the door as far as the tuition hike or fees might be? Or aren't you willing to pay anything at all?
Well, Mr. Rukavina, Representative Rukavina, I'm actually caught in that situation where you got me over the barrel. Whatever you say, I got to pay, because I'm actually three semesters in, and there's no way I would stop now. So if I had to pay the whole thing, I guess I would have to pay the whole thing. It wouldn't, I would have to burden that. Quite honestly, I would not stop where I am now. I'd just go and find another job.
Mr. Chair, if I recall
Rukavina.
Correctly, you're kind of active up there in the student body, and so what are you hearing? Are students looking
They're going to have to leave.
Are they looking at 5% increase, a freeze, a 10% increase? What are you hearing?
If they increase it, we're going to see less students. If that's what you're asking me, Mr. Rick.
Well, I'm basically just asking you to give me a heartfelt what you're hearing on
the
campus.
We can't afford it. It's going to hurt. It's going to mean that I'm going to probably have to take two jobs, working nights, get C's rather than A's. I've been three semesters. I'm actually a 4.0 student right now. I'm spending your money wisely. I am.
Great.
But if you cut funding now, after this investment you've made, it wouldn't actually be a good idea, I don't think. You can be the king of 100 peasants, or you can be the king of 100 doctors. Who are you going to tax 5 years from now?
Thank you for your sharing. We have some questions of the other two testifiers, I think, right now. We should move on to that.
Well, and Chair Nornes, I could just clarify also for Representative Brookavina, too. I know that we did we had a consultation conversation with our students this last weekend in Fergus Falls at our conference, and the students at Lake Superior College are asking to assume a 5% increase on top of the 2% that's going away from the 2% stimulus. So if that's a little more solid number for you, Representative Brookavina.
Representative Demke?
Thank you. I have questions for our two, I think it's Mr. Travis Johnson and Jeff Ditburner. Is that
you? It? Actually pronounced it correctly.
Good. Thank you. And I don't know whether we have Andrew Spaeth in the audience or not. He's from the University of Minnesota Student Association. But my question primarily is, it's my understanding, and please correct me if I'm wrong, that certainly I know at the University of Minnesota there are lots of students, or there is student participation in the decision making, both on the Board of Regents and on the Fees Committee for the University of Minnesota. Is that the case also at the Minnesota State College and students as well? Do you have board representatives? You have student participation on those committees?
Sure. Chair Nornes and Representative, we have the MinSU system has three student trustees that serve on its board.
Yeah.
And they're full voting members just like the rest of the the rest of the board. And then on the campuses, the student governments are all the representatives of all the student bodies, as I'm sitting here as a statewide representative for all the students. So the students do have a pretty great opportunity to be involved in the consultation process.
Good. Because I, one of the things I wanted to ask you about your testimony is you indicated that the board or the Board of Regents that you had petitioned for them to take a look at this, the reasonableness of the fee increases and things like that. What do you hear and how do your students vote on those issues?
Mr. Johnson.
Chair Nornes and Representative, I think you're asking me in which way we had input into that conversation.
Yes, and in other words, do you, the reason I would assume that students have been are part of that is so that you as a student body have participation in the governance and the use of the funds that you're paying to go to each one of your institutions. And therefore, I would assume that the students that you select to be on those boards have an obligation to represent you fairly. So I am asking you, how do your students vote when these issues come before the Board of Regents in terms of whether reducing fees? Because it's my understanding that students have just as much input as faculty on those committees, and I know they have a smaller representation at the board. How do your students vote when it comes to their voice on how you want the money, your tuition money spent?
Sure. Thank you, Chair Nornes and Representative. Each of the campuses, of course, has their own conversations with their students, and so it does vary by campus in which way the students feel. However, we have heard from our students at the statewide level that they don't believe that the 5% planning number is reasonable, and that's something that we've heard pretty collectively around the entire state. Mm-hmm. As far as the statewide representation is concerned, we do meet with the system's staff and the chancellor on a very regular basis, and we do attend all of the Board of Trustees meetings, and we've had these conversations with the board already, the conversation that I'm having with you today.
Okay, I just think that that's an important piece that I think it's important for you to recognize and for us to recognize that you have a voice. And when you take it, the increase in the fees, I mean, at the University of Minnesota, it's $27 million that's collected by of every single student that goes to the University of Minnesota. It's a $700 or $750, and that students have the opportunity, have a tremendous amount of input into what those fees are every year. Mm-hmm. And it would be interesting for you to see how your students are managing your fee budget, mm-hmm. and also how they're voting and what their voice is on the boards that are supposed to represent you. So you do have a voice in that respect, in addition to coming to the legislature, and we're very grateful that you're here, and we are enjoying your testimony.
Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I just want to ask the students to respond to the issues that were raised a little bit ago, and part of that is, well, number one, we have on this particular bill, we have a constitutional question, and should this bill move forward, we know that we can't impact from, you know, the work we've done over the years, necessarily the University of Minnesota, and how would you feel about equality in moving and restricting one body and not the other? That would be my first question, and then I'll just ask the second, and the other has to do with the fees issue, because I do think that's a legitimate concern. If we keep a cap on tuition or we limit tuition, but they're able to put the increase on fees, you know, I think that's something that the bill's author is going to need to grapple with, and if he is going to move something forward, he might want to include some language about fees. And I just wondered if you would comment on both those issues.
Sure. Chair Norris and Representative Norton, I think that, you know, I know that I speak for the two-year Minsky students, but I think speaking on behalf of students in the entire state, we would like to see some kind of predictability measure put in place so that we can plan for our education going into the future and that we're not ever unsure of what we're going to be paying. I think that's a fairness issue for all students and their families alike. As far as the fee question is concerned, at least in the Minsky system, the fees that we pay do have maximum caps put on them, and so I don't think we'd have to worry about, unless those caps were removed, which I don't think the Board of Trustees would do to us, I think that we're safe in that regard.
Okay, any other questions? If not, we thank you very much for your testimony, and we have Andrew Spaeth. Andrew, welcome to the committee, and if you'd identify yourself for the record, please.
Yeah, Chair Norris, members, my name is Andrew Spaeth. I'm a student at Bemidji State University, and I serve as the chair of the Minnesota State University Student Association. And so just to clarify, I represent the roughly 75,000 students that attend St. Cloud State University, Bemidji State University, Winona State, Metropolitan here in St. Paul, Southwest, in Marshall, Mankato State, and Minnesota State University, Moorhead. I just want to start by thanking Representative Swedinsky, Representative Vogel, and the committee here for starting this important conversation about tuition levels at our public higher education institutions in Minnesota. In the last decade, as all of you, I'm sure, are aware, tuition at the state universities has gone up by nearly 100%, on average about 10% per year, with some levels obviously being higher, some years being higher than others. Currently, the system, the Minsky system, is being funded at fiscal year 2002 levels, but we're serving 30,000 more students. And so we're paying more for our education, yet we're receiving fewer services, our class sizes are getting larger, the class offerings are more limited, and our students are graduating with more debt than they did 10 years ago. This is the result of decreases in the state appropriation and decreases in funding to public higher education. State university students and the Minsky system are uniquely positioned to help the state weather these tough economic times. The return on investment that for every dollar the taxpayers and our state invests in the Minsky system, the return on investment is $10.87. That is incredible. What an incredible investment to make in our state's future. together with the two-year institutions, the students that Travis and Jeff represent, we graduate over 60% of the people that are getting post-secondary degrees in our state. We're educating the 21st century workforce. 80% of those students are staying and working in Minnesota, building our future tax base and becoming the next business leaders, entrepreneurs, engineers, nurses, and technicians that our state needs. The planning numbers that our campuses have been given for the next biennium include a 12% increase in tuition. Given what we've seen in the last decade, I guess we shouldn't be surprised to have received those numbers. But as the previous testifiers mentioned, our students cannot afford to continue to burden the costs of decreases in funding to the state appropriation.
Can we interrupt for just a moment?
Absolutely.
Representative Bandian has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Spaeth, you just gave us a number of 12% for a tuition increase. Did you mean 12% per year or 12% over the biennium?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Bennion, over the biennium.
Yep. Okay, go ahead.
So, thank you. So MSUSA would like to continue to work closely with this committee to ensure the quality of our education is protected. At the same time, we take a tough look at how the system and our schools are delivering their core functions to students. We want to ensure that tuition increases are reasonable and not just supplanting cuts from the legislature. Our students, just as you are concerned about the economic reality of our state's deficit. However, we cannot afford to sacrifice Minnesota's economic vitality and competitiveness by continuing to restrict access to higher education. Today, students pay 56% of the cost of a public higher education in Minnesota. In 1980, students paid 20% of the cost of a public higher education in Minnesota. Now more than ever, it is challenging for Minnesota families to predict what it will cost to send their students to college. I've shared this with you in the past, but I want to reiterate that I have a large family, and my youngest brother is 7 years old. How is my family supposed to predict how much it will cost my 7-year-old brother to go to college in 11 years? If we continue down this same path, my brother will pay double what I'm paying for a public higher education. The students attending our state colleges and universities today are no doubt the business leaders and the taxpayers of our state tomorrow. We need to give our students and our future leaders the opportunity to pursue a higher education. Minnesota enjoys the quality of life that we have today, in part because of the investments in education our state has made in the past. So, thank you, and I would be happy to stand for any questions the committee has.
We have a question from Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Spaeth, for being back here today. One alternative I've been asking about, because I think Representative Mazarol and I may have talked about this in the past, is we both are at institutions where you have the ability to, in essence, have a guaranteed tuition. You may pay high in the first year, but you know what your tuition is going to be during your time in the institution. And this may be not as valuable to say to a two-year than a four-year, but do you know? Have you had a chance to talk with Representative Swiedzinski or others about the possibility of essentially having a guaranteed tuition plan?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mark, we have not had an opportunity to have that conversation yet. I would also just add that I represent a large body or a large collection of students across the state, and I work for a board of directors, and so our board would need to have that conversation as well.
Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Swiedzinski, maybe this is an alternative to explore as well. The University of Minnesota has this at the medical school. This has been attempted before, if I understand from Mr. Berg correctly. In part, people were betting on whether inflation was going to go up a certain percent each year and whether it was better to buy in a tuition level on year one or just to hope that tuition wasn't going to go up dramatically in succeeding years. This may be one part of the discussion that this bill clearly needs to have, along with the eliminating the ability of central office to eliminate courses, eliminate programs, eliminate class offerings, eliminate faculty, raise fees. This may be another part of the conversation to be had about this idea.
Any other questions? Otherwise, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Russ Stamp. Welcome again to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Russ Stanton. I'm Director of Government Relations for the Interfaculty Organization. For the new members, that's the faculty at about 3,800 full and part-time faculty at the state universities. And I'm here to testify against House File 856. And I want to emphasize that our organization has always believed in low tuition policies. I've been doing this job for 26 years. Throughout those 26 years, we've always been advocates for affordable public higher education. The problem is this: higher education, the instruction at state universities, is paid for from two sources, tuition and state appropriations. And the problem is for the last decade, the state's commitment to higher education has slipped very, very badly. The state's funding has not kept up with enrollment growth. The state's funding has not kept up with inflation. And as a result, the cost of running our institutions have been passed off of the state appropriation and onto the student in the form of higher tuition, which is causing the tuition rates to go up rapidly. I passed out a handout here. And I love to use this handout because I think it illustrates pretty clearly what's been happening over the last decade. It's the historical tuition, appropriation, enrollment data for MNSCU. And if you look, you know, the governor's proposal, which I think we'd all agree is probably the high watermark for higher education, the governor's proposal for MNSCU this coming biennium for each year is $592.5 million each year. That's $9 million less than what the state appropriation was to MNSCU in 2002. Bad as that is, if you look on column 5 of this spreadsheet, it has the enrollment. In 2002, we had 26,215 student full-time equivalent students in MNSCU. Now we have 158,071 full-time equivalent students. That's 32,000 more students. That's the equivalent of St. Cloud State, Bemidji State, Winona State combined being educated on $9 million less from the state than 10 years ago. And on top of that, we have had inflation in the last 10 years. Fortunately, it's been fairly low, but compound inflation has been about 15.7% if you measured it by the CPI, with no appropriation to cover it. Now, the costs associated with inflation and with enrollment are real, and the money has to come from somewhere. And where it has come from has been the students and their parents. If you look at column 6 and 7 on the spreadsheet. The last time the state lived up to its statutory policy of the state paying for two-thirds of the cost of tuition and the students paying one-third, and that is state policy and statute, the last time they've lived up to that was back in 2002, when the students were paying a little over 33% of the cost and the state was paying 66% of the cost. Since then, because of the increased enrollment that wasn't funded and the inflation and so forth, that cost has shifted so that by this year, the state's share is down to only 43.4% of the cost, and the student share is up to 56.6% of the cost. That is what is causing tuition to rise. If you look at the final column, column 10, the per pupil funding, you know, appropriations and tuition at MNSCU, inflation adjusted, it's been flat, in fact, a little bit declining over the last 10 years. What's been happening is we've just been shifting the cost off of the state onto the students. The MNSCU is a very highly efficient system. If you look at the, if you go on the MNSCU website, they have an accountability tool they call dashboards. And if you look at the, on there, the per pupil cost of instruction at state universities are some of the lowest in the nation for peer institutions. Relative to other institutions in Minnesota, MNSCU tuition rates are among the lowest. At private colleges, the average tuition that is paid is, according, and this is from your own index off your session weekly, at private colleges, the average tuition is $30,816. At University of Minnesota, $11,091. At state universities, it's $6,596. And at community colleges, or the two-year colleges, it's $4,900. And one of the reasons why those costs are so low is because we are so efficient, particularly in the area of instruction. The faculty understand that we have a budget crisis. I mean, we saw it coming years ago. 2 years ago, we came in, proposed, we came forward with it, a two-year freeze on salaries. As part of the union coalition that negotiates the health care, we have we negotiated cost containment measures that have held the cost of health insurance at zero for 2 years now. We've had early retirement incentives that we came forward with that turned over high cost senior faculty to save the jobs of younger faculty. That saved lots of money. And of course, we've had position reductions, you know, about 80 at Mankato, about 80 at St. Cloud, 37 at Bemidji, whatever. And we know that it's only going to get worse. I do want to respond, kind of break in here and respond to something that I heard on, saw on a public radio article, and it was in the Winona paper also, and that is that compensation costs are driving the cost of tuition. And I want to really take that on. If you look at the back page of my handout, there is a, this is from your own state employee subcommittee on employee relations that tracks all the cost of all the state contracts. And on this, it shows the percent increase in our contracts for each of the various unions and so forth in the state. And in the middle are the MNSCU units. And you can see the interfaculty organization, our increased costs were 0.2% over 2 years, over the last 2 years. 0.2%. That includes everything. That includes pensions, health care, the whole bit. Tuition went up 5% each year, tuition from that. So the tuition rates were 50 times as large as our compensation rates during those 2 years. And the same was true back in 2004 and 2005. Our compensation increase during that biennium was 1.69% increase. The increase in tuition rates during those 2 years was 15% each year, 30%. So it is not compensation that is drawing, or pushing up the cost of tuition. What it is it's a shrinking state commitment in terms of appropriation. Of course, we're having cuts. That's hard on faculty, but it's also meant fewer sections for students. It takes longer for them to complete. It means bigger class sizes, less individual attention, less advising per student, and cutting us more without backfilling, at least somewhat, with tuition would be disastrous. Finally, let me say that we do have a process in MNSCU for setting tuition rates, and we don't like setting tuition rates in the political arena. Quite frankly, we have a board of trustees. Part of their job is to manage the system. That includes setting tuition rates. They have a very extensive consultative process where they consult the students about any tuition rates and so forth. And we think that that is a reasonable system and is a far better arena, more objective arena to set tuition rates in. So with that, I'll end. I'm glad to answer questions.
Members, any questions?
Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair, if I could, Mr. Stan, how long... I know now that I believe in your last contract, union contract, you took a pay freeze, but when does it open up for negotiations again?
July 1st is the next round.
And if I'm not mistaken, and I'm just going by memory, your increases haven't been that huge over the last decade.
We've had good years. We had couple contracts ago, we had some good years. We made some advancements, but generally, our at all ranks, we're at about the 50th percentile level.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Stan, if I do remember, though, you've got fairly decent advanced layoff notice in your contract, and how many of your members have gotten those notices within the last year or two?
Mr. Chair and Representative Rukavina, I'd like to distinguish between layoff and position reduction, because we saw this coming, and we've had, for instance, at a Mankato or St. Cloud, about 80 position reductions, but those weren't all necessarily layoffs. What a lot of them are is with a fixed term faculty member, they just don't renew them. It's you know, their contract. It's a position gone. Somebody lost their job, but it isn't a layoff. And in many cases, one of the things that we kind of proactively got out and did was push early retirement incentives, because you can take, you know, get a person at the top to retire early, you save the job of somebody at the bottom that makes half as much when you do that, and plus, you know, the institution saves some money by doing that. And so what they would do is retire people out, not backfill the position, and so forth. But we've had reductions in positions,
Well, Mr. Chair, yeah. Could Mr. Stanton get me that information at least, so I could see what's been happening over the last decade or so?
Well, over the last decade, sure.
In your
I'll rank. Be glad to do it.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yep.
Laura King. Good to see you again. Welcome to our committee.
My name is Laura King, and I'm the Vice Chancellor and CFO for the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. With your indulgence, Mr. Chair, I'd like to ask my colleague to go first, and then I'll close. With me today is Don Reimer. Don is the Chief Financial Officer for North Hennepin Community College and was good enough to make herself available to us.
Welcome.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Chair Nornes. My name is Don Reimer. I'm the Chief Finance and Facilities Officer at North Hennepin Community College, located in the northwest suburb of Brooklyn Park. I have been the CFO at North Hennepin for over 11 years, and prior to that I served 21 years in private sector. And the work that I do at the college is very similar to running a business. I make sure that the financial health, it is my responsibility to make sure that the financial health of the college is strong, as well as ensuring that our students can afford to come there. I am here today to tell you and explain my position on this bill, and my belief that this bill will hurt North Hennepin Community College, its students, and its employees. First of all, I'd like to share with you the impact on the college, its students, and its employees if the legislature freezes tuition during the 2012-2013 biennium, as well as the proposed budget cuts that are being discussed at the legislature. For planning purposes, I've been working on budget scenarios running the gamut. I think I've heard 6% funding cuts. I've heard 20% funding cuts. It makes it really tough to put together a balanced budget. But let me explain what would happen if we were to recognize a 12% budget cut in our funding, as well as
let's say I had planned for a 5% tuition increase, and that was frozen, and we didn't achieve that. To our campus, and that's really what I'm speaking to, that would amount to $3 million in 2012. Our budget would be cut $3 million. And I know that that's kind of a term that, you know, an amount that doesn't really relate to anything, but if I were to go to my budget task force and have to cut $3 million, I'm going to tell you what I would be proposing to do. And these are the people that will be making decisions about how we're going to absorb $3 million. And I think the students would be very interested in this, too. And by the way, our budget task force includes students. The first thing I will recommend is that we will cut all repair and replacement by 50%. The next thing is to leave vacant 10 non-faculty positions that are currently open. I would also be recommending that we would be doing some creative hiring, such as taking and hiring part-time versus full-time employees. I would reduce the technology budget by 50%. And I would cut $600,000 in selected student services as well as non-traditional programs from our curriculum. I would turn off our parking lights, our parking lot lights in the night, and save $20,000. And I would add one more student, and I might have to fight faculty to do this, but I would say we would need to add one more student to each open class section to get additional revenues in the range of $500,000. That would get us $3 million and get a statutory balance budget. The entire campus would be impacted by these measures, and we would have to do every one of these measures to achieve that balanced budget. Second, I would like to just say that I'm not sure by this bill if we would be able to even say what would be the impact on higher education in Minnesota. I'm worried. I would say that without that information or that data or that some research, you know, what's going to happen? And there are some things I could be quite certain about. I could be quite certain that the growth in innovation and new programs would be limited. I could be quite certain that the physical improvements we've been doing on our campuses would be stalled, that our quality education would be compromised. I would also suggest that large monetary investments would need to be made in the future to catch us up, if you will, to catch Minnesota up to the states around us. And I also say it's very likely we'd have large tuition increases sometime in the future. You know, students come to the Minsku institutions, and they come there because of our high-quality instructors and our very innovative programs, and our state-of-the-art facilities, labs, and technology. And I want to just tell you something we've just done that we couldn't have done if we didn't have the money, and if the money had been basically taken away. We recently, this fall, spent $120,000 in three classrooms to install and pilot what we are calling classroom capture media sites. And these classrooms and the classes that are being held there are streamed live on the website, and they're also archived so that students who have registered for those classes can actually go online, watch their class, or maybe go back and watch it later. Classroom capture helps the students who cannot get to class because perhaps their job, their shift got changed, or perhaps their child is ill. You know, all those things where life gets in the way of attending class. We find that, you know, we have students whose English might be rusty, and they need to see those lectures again to be able to understand them. So that classroom capture actually benefits all the students who need to, you know, be able to be successful in school. And to retain those students, we like to offer innovative thinking and ideas such as that. But again, we could have never considered doing something like that without the funding that's being proposed to be taken away. The third thing I was going to raise, which has already been discussed by numerous people before me, is the role of the Board of Trustees. And, you know, with the consultation process, with the guidelines that the board gives us, with the consultation we do amongst the CFOs,
And the data that the system office provides to the board, as well as the colleges and universities, you know, they really have the knowledge and the skills, and they have students that sit on the board. They have everything they need to make good decisions concerning tuition. And the consultation process that my president and I do with our students, they get it. They understand why tuition's going up. And, you know, I did hear the association people that were here today, and like I heard them say, it's not about freezing tuition. It's about making sure everybody's taking a piece of their of the pain. And I would say that the college, every year, in you know, we look at our budgets. The last 3 years, we've cut our budgets. We've, you know, taken our share of the pain. And so I would just say that I don't see the need for this particular bill. And I thank you for your attention. If you have any questions, Chair, I'd be happy to answer.
Thank you. Ms. King, would you have any additional comments, or are we just going to answer questions?
Mr. Chair, I have a few remarks, but I'll certainly wait until members...
I'm not sure we have any questions at this time, so you may go ahead.
Mr. Chair, just if I might, and members, I think you can expect our view here to be a request that this bill not go forward, but rather you rely on the Board of Trustees, which is appointed by the legislature, and has the has the closest contact with this issue, and has worked the hardest over the years to balance the competing pressures that are on the system. As several speakers have pointed out, we've managed very large enrollment growths over the last 10 years in an environment of declining state support, and we've done that with a tuition increase that averages about 4% a year. So we don't believe we have been undisciplined in our tuition management. We strive very tightly to manage our need to maintain access, and by that I mean have enough revenue to hire faculty, have enough revenue to add class sections and course sections, to balance that with our commitment to maintaining to the greatest extent possible an affordable cost of higher education. So it's our desire that you rely upon the Board of Trustees to struggle with this issue and recognize that until we know what the outcome of the legislative session is, it's pretty difficult for us to pick a number without any appreciation of the consequences. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. Representative Norton, you have a question?
I do, Mr. Chair. Thank you. I'm a little hesitant to get into this. I leaned over to my colleague, and he said it might be opening a discussion we don't want to open here, but I'm going to throw it out here anyway. As I was looking at some of the information that came from Russ Stanton, Mr. Stanton, I guess I'm looking for the financial officer answer to this question. Appropriations have decreased significantly from the 2002 to 2011, and yet we have continued to take enrolled students. And please don't get me wrong, because I want all the kids we can in college, but given the financial hardships that we've been under, and then looking at 25,000 additional students, can you tell me how would a financial officer or management make the decision to continue to enroll students at a time of decreasing funding?
Excellent. Who wants question. That question? In fact, it was a bullet point on my testimony. It said what we would have to do, and then I hesitated and I crossed that off. Because our most important strategic, you know, strategy is to be accessible to all students. And what that means is, you know, we do what we can. And I don't see at least our college, and I can only speak for my community college and not the universities that Mr. Stanton was discussing, I can't see us capping enrollment. I mean, I shouldn't say never, but I'm not going to propose that to my budget task force this year.
Mr. Chair, Representative Norton, we have, in certain segments of the system, capped enrollment already and have been capping enrollment at the program level and the course level for several years. It's a closed equation. It's absolutely a closed equation, and we expect that under certain scenarios here in the coming biennium, we are going to limit enrollment even further. And that's the trade-off against the cost.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Rukmina?
Ms. King, would you elaborate on where that's happening? I don't quite follow your
certainly,
answer.
Certainly, Mr.
Give us
Chair.
Some specifics just to help me out.
Ms. King?
Representative Rukmina, we have limited enrollment in most of our allied health programs for several years now because of faculty constraints and because of space constraints. We have limited enrollment in several of the technical college programs. I can get you a list if you'd like. We have programs that run waiting lists. Remember the newspaper articles about the St. Cloud Technical College application window and kids lining up in the parking lot at 2 in the morning? So that has gone on for several years. Several of the universities closed their enrollment in the spring for fall term. So we have it happening at both the institution level and the program level.
Okay, you have to follow up?
Not to that.
Oh, okay.
Well, I did want to follow up to my comment, if I could, Mr. Chair.
Representative Norton.
We're facing some really difficult decisions, and we have been for many years. We act as if this is new. This isn't new. We've been talking about it for some time, and it's extremely unpleasant. I guess I just... As we talk about solutions to the situation that the state is in, and certainly as we await budget targets, what can and could happen, whether we cap tuition or we don't cap tuition, is that we are going to have students in a time when we know that 70% of the jobs in the future require some sort of 2-4 university or college degree. There will be less options available for students. And it can either be keeping the options and paying a little more, or it can be reducing the options and the number of students that are able to take up those options. So they're tough decisions. I appreciate your answer, and I think you have a tough task ahead of you, as does this committee, and I think we just need to weigh very carefully those choices.
Representative Bennion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've waited to ask this question for some time. Let me start with a premise that I think you'll agree with. The demand for higher education has gone up. It's gone up not just in the last 5 years, not just in the last 10 years, but over pretty much the entire time I've been in Minnesota since the mid-80s. It's gone up. I mean, I think we could all agree with that. We hit it with a double whammy of back-to-back 15% tuition increases in 2003 and 2004. And if you look at the enrollment figures on the material Mr. Stanton handed out, we just stopped the rate of growth of enrollment. We didn't even stop it. It walked through a 30% increase and then kept growing again once we dialed that back to something in single digits. So we have a situation where we have limited resources and a service, the demand for which is growing rapidly. For reasons that we could go hours on that, and it doesn't help us get to this question. I have basically two questions, and the first of them is sort of this idea that we sort of do this sequentially. The legislature sits, Representative Rukavina, now Representative Norna, sit down, they come up with a target, they develop a budget, they negotiate it with the governor of the other party, both for you and you now, and eventually come up with a number. And then after that, and only after that, the Board of Trustees sits down and says, okay, now let's pluck a number out of the air and make that our tuition number. And every number you choose has the resulting amount of students that you'll get enrolled. And so when you talk about whether or not you have to ration, you can either ration by the price or you can ration by some other means. And, of course, the people who are using your service already don't want to be rationed. They don't want to be the people left off the train. They want to keep going to school. Who could blame them? We do. I mean, I'm part of you, and we do great stuff. But my point is, why do we do it sequentially? Is there something philosophically wrong for you with us thinking about tuition and appropriation at the same time?
Ms. King?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bennion, we would be ecstatic if that's the way this process worked. But we sit here today with no understanding of what our state appropriation support will be in 120 days. with no understanding of what our compensation costs will be in 120 days, and with no understanding of what our tuition rates will be in 120 days, because the process works sequentially. We are very reluctant to commit to a tuition number in the absence of a state appropriation number, because we would do so without understanding what the consequences are. You're the leadership here, so you're leading on the state appropriation question, and we're trying to give you advice about the trade-offs that we're struggling with. But I can't advise our board to pick a tuition number without an understanding of the other parts of the equation.
And, thank you, Chair Norris. Ms. King, you've just identified what I think is what I'm looking for. I'm trying to hang on to something that allows me to say, if I appropriate X dollars and we want to serve the same population of students, this is how much the tuition increase would have to be. You sometimes have that, but I almost wish I had a schedule I could pick a number from in some way. And if I decided, frankly, I couldn't afford to do anything on that schedule, I would be having to say, all right, we can't serve as many students. But we do know that the demand for this product has gone up. So when I hear, people saying tuition increases have been very high, gosh, so is my cable bill, but I still buy it because I like what I watch on TV at night. Because there's more stuff there than there used to be. So it's a demand issue as well as a supply issue. All right, and so that's there. One more question on this, which is only tangentially related to Representative Swiezinski's bill, but I heard this again last night from another legislator not in the room, and it's about differential tuition. We have different programs that have different costs to them. We have different programs that have different demand to them. And yet we seem stuck with a model that says we're going to charge one price to every student for every credit, regardless if it's a credit in a low demand area or high demand area. I dare not say what those are. I'll insult somebody. So what are we open to that? Because that certainly is. I should tell you that certainly is a way that many people in marketing and in management and in economics think about how you can attract additional tuition, how you can attract additional revenue without perhaps hurting some people who have demand for courses that perhaps are lower cost.
Who would like to respond?
Yes, Representative. We have actually at the community college moved into that realm. One of our higher cost programs is nursing. We do have a differential tuition for nursing to help us defray the actual costs of that program. I see more of the institutions going that way. I think the universities have done that for some time. So yes, to answer your question, we are moving into that costing approach.
Well,
Representative Bannion.
Thank you, Chair Norris. Ms. Reamer, those are driven though by the cost of your program. Can we do anything about driving them by literally what the demand for the program is? When you see somebody lining up at 2 in the morning to get into a program at a technical college, that's a pretty good sign you've got excess demand. And usually the way a business deals with that is it usually raises the price.
Chair Dornis, yes, just to respond. Those are the programs, yes, exactly. Nursing program, we have limited space. We have more applications than seats in the room, and the students, it is a market-driven rate, if you will. The students are willing to pay for that education and for that, ultimately, that degree.
If I can just ask Ms. King, Ms. Chair Norris, thank you. At the university side, we don't see nearly so much of that, I think. I mean, certainly my experience at St. Cloud State would indicate we see a lot less of it. Is there any discussion at the board or within the system office for more market-based tuition?
Ms. King?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bannion, this is sort of a value-laden discussion in our community because it sets up against one another the idea that students should be able to achieve the education they desire at a equalized price versus we should charge more for certain programs. It's not like the professional schools in the university environment where it's moved into generally accepted practice that law school costs more and business school costs more. We have a pretty heated debate in our community about whether it's fair, to use that expression, to charge for certain programs more than we charge for others. And so it's done, and we have a framework for the conversation, but it's not without its own value-laden constituents.
It is value-laden. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It is value-laden. You're right, Ms. King. But when you choose not to, you're also making a value statement.
That's
and
right.
That value statement is that some professions which provide you with lower income at the end of the day are in fact cross-subsidizing some of the higher paying ones. And I'm not sure, as a matter of public policy, why that's a good idea.
Representative Morrow.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm still working my head around what Representative Banyan's talking about in terms of price point and demand and like. And it's not Representative Banyan that I necessarily disagree with you, although I'm not sure I'm ready to sign on to an approach that charges more for a course, a credit, or a major, depending on the demand. I'd have to think about that. I'd have to think about the financial aid implications and the like. So I'm not asking you to respond. I have to think that through. But Representative Banyan and Mr. Chair, I should note there are organizations, there are groups right here in the room right now who could tell you, you cut a percent off the appropriation, here's what the effect would be upon tuition. You cut 5% off the appropriation, here's the effect on tuition. I'm sure there are folks who will now stop you after the hearing today to share that information with you. But that is the key. It is the appropriation that higher education receives, that the University of Minnesota and MinSCU receive, that will drive much of the sequential decision making that you're describing. And that's why everyone in the room was waiting to find out what the target is, what the budget is for higher ed.
Representative Banyan.
If I may respond to that, thank you. And I apologize, it's not completely protocol, but Representative Morrow, you're right, but the decision is also you don't have to fund every last student. We can make a decision, do we fund the last student or do we fund the last person in the nursing home? Do we fund the last student or do we fund a job training program somewhere? So that decision isn't just about picking and holding the number of students constant. Sometimes you're picking and deciding you're going to have fewer students. It's a difficult conversation, but it's the one we have to have.
Speaking of conversations, we have a student from the university that has also asked to testify, so we'd like to bring him up
at this time. Thank you.
Representative Riccobino?
I just want, and Representative Banyan, I don't even want to get into the discussion of, differential tuitions and market-based whatever you were talking about. I'm not an economist, but I do know this. The last legislator representative that kept telling us they were economists lasted two terms. So, but I do want to ask Ms. King a question.
Okay.
Ms. King, you don't know a lot of variables that are going to happen at the Capitol, but you know the variable in this bill, according to your last tuition revenue, if I take 5% even, you're going to lose $40 million if the Board of Trustees says that you can't raise says that you'll raise tuition 5%. This bill costs you $40 million. And so I guess, how is that $40 million allocated from your biggest institution, which I think is St. Cloud State, to your smallest institution, which is Rainy River? $40 million, and let's say if you did a 5% tuition increase, the board agreed to that.
Ms. King?
Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina, I do not have that relationship in my head. St. Cloud is about 10% of the state appropriation, and we are roughly at parity now with state appropriation and tuition in total. So if that holds at St. Cloud's level, then this $40 million would be about $4 million for St. Cloud. That's as much as I can tell you offhand. I can certainly get you that, but I apologize. I don't have that in my head.
Can I ask one quick question? What is your time frame for your budgets?
Mr. Chair, the board will not act on on college and university operating budgets until the legislature has finished its work. There have been occasions when we've had to move into July before that action happened. Typically, we have a first reading and a public hearing in May at the May board meeting, and then a second reading and adoption in June. But we do that with 90% knowledge of the legislative outcome. If we don't have that knowledge, then we'll just put off the board action.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for your
testimony,
for being here. And we have only a few minutes left, so if we can, I'm not sure if there's others in the audience that want to testify either, but go ahead. Come on down. If you want to identify yourself for the record before I sneeze, go ahead.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Matt Forsty. I'm a student at the University of Minnesota and a member of the Undergraduate Student Association. I'll be really quick because in watching all the testimony and the discussion among members today, I think nearly all of my points of concern and basically everything I want to talk about has been mentioned at least once. So, but I'll get to our position on the bill, and that is that although we're extremely concerned about the raising levels of tuition, I've mentioned this 100 times that tuition at the University of Minnesota has risen 134% in the last decade. Although we're extremely concerned about that, and although we can't sustain those increases going forward, we don't think that a bill that includes a tuition freeze is the right course to take. And that's because we believe that the costs and the consequences of such a freeze would be put first and foremost onto students. We're especially concerned about academics, laying off of faculty, which has already occurred at the University of Minnesota, increasing class sizes, reduction in sections, elimination of programs, elimination of advising services and other student services that are vitally important to our experience at the university, and the possibility of elimination of things like university-provided need-based aid. I think the number is that $30 million of the U budget is dedicated to need-based aid. That's what I heard. I could be wrong, but I think that's right, and that could be cut into as a result of something like a tuition freeze. We're also, of course, concerned about how the way the bill is written, which seems like it would allow for fee increases to simply take the place of tuition increases. So just to bring that up, I know it's been said. So although we admire that this bill seeks to address the large problem of tuition increases, we think that it just creates or would create a lot of different smaller problems, and those have been touched on numerous times. So even though we don't support the bill, we really appreciate the sentiment, and this conversation needs to be had, and that there needs to be a solution. And I'll thank you for the time, and I'll stand for any questions.
Thank you for being here today. And
Mr. Chair?
Testifying. Representative Rucamino.
Not a question for the testifier, but we did get a letter from President Brunix, and I don't know. Did you pass it out? We passed it out to the DFL side. Did you pass it out to the
I don't know if all members have seen that.
There was a letter addressed to it was Senator Carlson and Representative Switzinski with a copy to me and Representative Pappas and you and Senator Fishback. And I just wondered if you passed it out, because we did put the letter in the DFL packet, and I'm wondering if anyone from the university would care to testify on it.
No. We can...
I see Ms. Donna Peterson is in the audience, and I don't know if she wants to make a comment, but I guess given the question I asked at the beginning of the hearing today, the committee meeting, what would be the attitude of the Board of Regents and the President if there was a mandated tuition freeze? I'm assuming case law on that proves you right, then you'd probably take us to court. But then again, as the chair of this committee over the last 4 years, I've dared them to take me to court several times. So, I mean, I
it's Peterson, identify yourself for the record, please.
Donna Peterson, University of Minnesota, Associate Vice President, Government and Community Relations. Mr. Chairman, Representative Rukavina, there's a couple of points on that. One is that obviously the state funding for the University of Minnesota, and I guess Minsky as well, we're at about the 2001 level that we're funding right now with state money, and so it's no secret that tuition has played a major role in how the university is being funded. But at the same time that that decision was made that we had to increase tuition to keep up with the demands, there was a significant commitment made with those resources to fund scholarships, particularly for the low-income and middle-income students, and I think you're aware of that. And we wanted the message to be that even though the tuition was increasing, academically prepared students would not be turned away from the university because they did not have they came from a low-income family. But one of the other things that I wanted to point out that has not been mentioned here, just for something different, is that, and it's mentioned in the letter, with the University of Minnesota, we have the ability to sell bonds and sell lots of them. And we look to credit rating, credit agencies for our credit rating is very important to us. And we know that if tuition was capped, and particularly if it was frozen, that could lead to looking not very favorably to us. And when we go back to the bond market, could have an impact on what rating we would have. And finally, to your point of the University of Minnesota Board of Regents are elected by all of you. You just elected four of them. That is obviously a very direct link into what decisions that board makes, and the Constitution does give them the responsibility of setting tuition, and we would ask that you allow them to continue with that responsibility to oversee the tuition. We're very concerned about being able to maintain our scholarships for our low-income students, and also, and just as importantly as our students have been saying to you, is the quality that students have in their education.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We've had testimony from the President, Brunix, about the undergraduate Minnesota resident and their fact that their tuition is kept fairly reasonable due to the fact that you have these numbers of scholarships. Can you break down all those scholarships again then? Because you talk in the letter from the President about the Promise Scholarship, but don't you have a number of those that are aimed towards Minnesota residents only?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rukavina, the low-income scholarship as well as the middle-income scholarship have been rolled into one scholarship now with a Promise Scholarship, and depending upon the family income as to what that scholarship level will be all the way up to, I believe it's $100,000 income.
Okay, and Mr. Chair, what kind of number are we giving out a year? I'm assuming this is some kind of an endowment, or maybe it's an annual fundraiser. I don't know that, but what's the dollar amount of your Promise Scholarship annually?
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to have to look at the letter and actually quote from that if I can.
I don't see it anymore.
13,000 low and middle income students who currently receive financial aid for the Promise Scholarship.
Excuse me, there it is. To more than 73 million. That is just the Promise Scholarship, or is that all other ones combined too?
I believe that is, I'll clarify that for you.
Okay, and I guess my point, members, is, you know, the university is lucky. It's our land-grant institution. It, you know, receives certain funds and has some autonomy that Minsky doesn't have. And in the past, I've tried as the chair to try to figure out a way to set up some type of scholarship endowment for the Minsky system, but you know, it's hard to do because as soon as we're into a bind, we'd steal it from them. And, you know, that's a luxury that the university has, but it's also, I guess, to the detriment of the Minsky system that we don't have an ability to do something like that. Members, it's a difficult budget year, and I don't think Representative Swadzinski's bill is well-intentioned that it is helps us get out of this mess.
Here we have about a minute left, and the author probably should have the last word here, so...
Well, again, I just want to thank you for allowing testimony on this bill, and I appreciate your service to higher education. I thank the students for coming and giving of your day, and with that.
All right, thank you. So. All right, this bill will be laid over, and our committee is adjourned.